Welcome to Voices from the Dark, episode number 12. I've been waiting for this episode for a long time, and probably you have as well. So welcome. This is episode number 12 of Voices from the Dark. And before we get into what is contained herein, I guess I would like to say that this is a special episode. Not only because it's just another episode and I love doing this, but also it's a special number. It's a dozen, and I'm going to call it the Dirty Dozen because I've been doing this podcast. It's been down and dirty. So I would like to invite all my previous guests and anybody listening to come out on a specific night. And we'll all have some drinks and talk about podcasting and what's so good about it. I'll probably announce the place over social media or in the blog, in the show notes of the podcast. It's another milestone, but really, I don't want to have every episode be a milestone. I guess the episode number 13, which is coming up, could also be a milestone because it's a lucky number 13, but I'm not going to worry too much about that kind of thing. I really just been planning this sort of Dirty Dozen party for a while. Most likely it'll be at a place in Neukölln in Berlin, probably at one of the places that I've already had the show. I think the Black Lodge would be a great place, but there's other places. So, without further ado, let's move on. What's coming up on this episode? That's probably what you're all thinking right now. Or you're probably not thinking that since you read the title. And the title says it. So anyway, for those of you who did not read the title, this is Voices from the Dark, episode 12. And it is featuring Mistaken Ideas 2, so the second installment of the Mistaken Ideas series, which is a series about logical fallacies, how to identify them, and how to avoid them. I guess I could just go into that a little bit more, as I usually do, kind of ramble about why is it important to be able to identify these fallacies. I guess the most important thing, is the most important reason why you should be able to identify these things is because they happen all the time. You do them, I do them, everybody does them, and we have to stop doing it. Obviously, they have some usefulness, mostly through deception. That's deception. So lies, manipulation. They're very good for that kind of thing. They're also good for jokes. People use fallacies for jokes. People use them for making puns and playing with words. But when they're presented as being facts or truths or any other kind of arguments, argument is a word I'll get to a little later. When it comes to those things, they can be quite dangerous and they can mislead and lead you down the wrong path or fill your head with false things, which is, I think we can all agree, is not good. So, if you can identify them, and if you're like me and you've been reading books about this and like looking at Wikipedia, looking up different definitions of these fallacies, reading books like Mastering Logical Fallacies by Michael Wythe. If you're like me, then you know you're starting to see just how prevalent they are, how everywhere they are, ubiquitous they are. So that is the main reason why I do this, is for my own education and to help other people to come on this journey with me. To, you know, educate ourselves and become somewhat masters of this thing, because the more you entertain it, the better you will be at identifying all these things. And there's a lot of them. Now, of course, logical fallacies on their own are a category. The main idea of a logical fallacy is that it is an incorrect conclusion, basically. This is just off the top of my head. I'm not reading that from a definition or any notes that I have, although I do have my notes and some definitions in front of me. A fallacy is classically, I think, represented by the term non sequitur, which means it does not follow in Latin. And so it basically means that, so a non sequitur is a type of fallacy, but it's extremely general. And you can look at it as being the most general kind of way of having a logical fallacy. And of course, I'm talking mostly about informal fallacies, as I mentioned in the previous episode. Formal fallacies are more about the structure of arguments and conclusions, premises and conclusions. So these are informal fallacies, which are based more on the meaning of the arguments. So before we get on to the and of course in each episode, like we did in the last episode, I'm going to talk about one particular fallacy. I think that's more than enough for one episode, especially since this is sort of a rambling type of thing. I will have guests at some point, and that's probably going to be more entertaining for everybody. And it'll be a little bit less rambling, more like an interview or a conversation. But in this episode, I'm gonna present another fallacy. In the previous episode, we did the fallacy of the horns, which is also called a loaded question fallacy or a complex question fallacy. It goes by many names, and I gave one example. I think it was the are you still beating your wife example. So it's like, the name of it, the fallacy of the horns, and the loaded question, complex question, it refers to the structure, you know, the meaning of these, of the statement of the argument itself. So are you still beating your wife means that if you answer it yes or no, you are accepting one of the premises, or you're accepting all of the premises. So before I get on to the next fallacy, before I tell you what it is, which I think is a great one, it's extremely common, I'm going to make a few announcements. I've got a possible live show coming up, a collaboration. That's going to be in September, and it'll be for a series of episodes. I'm not going to say much more than that. I'm not going to say where it's going to be posted because it's not really set yet. And I don't want to ruin the surprise if it actually does come about. And yes, like I said, it's a collaboration, 9 episodes. I'm going to be able to choose my own topic. I can give one little hint. There's music involved. I won't be doing the music myself, but I believe that will be a strong element of the each episode. And I'll have a guest. At least that's the way I envision it. Yeah, and then there's another collaboration that I've got coming up, a possible collaboration. That's with a previous guest. I also don't want to say too much about that because actually I don't know that much about it. I've just been approached to do it. And yeah, that one is also possibly about music, or at least audio recordings and things of an audio nature, let's just say. I'm also thinking before I get onto that, the socialism podcast, which I think will be called You Capitalist, You Comma Capitalist, that is still pending. I have a tentative collaborator on that, but I do want to get some things settled in my mind, and also format and structure wise before I, you know, well, actually before I do the episode or start having guests. And so finally, the final announcement is that I think it's going to be smart for me in the long run if I do this twice a month, but do, or I should say, still do multiple episodes a month, like 3, 4, maybe even more episodes per month. But this is actually not even relevant to most people listening to the Voices from the Dark podcast. It's more about me and getting my schedule, my personal schedule, under control. I think I'm going to do a fixed date for the podcast. And so what that means is that guests will join me for a 3-hour period. 2 to 3 guests will join me for a 3-hour period where I'm recording, and I'll do multiple series. So for example, the Interviews with Artists series, I would have one guest on, let's say, Sunday the 1st or whatever. And I would also have a guest for the Mistaken Ideas podcast, and I would record 2 episodes in one day, or even I really am reluctant to stray away from the episode format because that's so typical or expected in podcasts. So even if I did 3-hour-long recordings or 2-hour-long recordings in one day, I would still label them episode X and episode X plus one. So, that's just a little bit of a few announcements and a few upcoming things. So let's get on to the Fallacies podcast, the book, Mastering Logical Fallacies. I recommend it to everybody. I'm not getting paid to say that, unfortunately. I don't even know really who Michael Wythe is. I think I read some of his credentials. It's not really that big of an issue for me because a lot of this stuff can be confirmed on various pages and sites on the internet, which I will get to in a few moments because that's something that I've been wanting to do with this Mistaken Ideas podcast, is to, you know, give references and things of that nature on the internet and elsewhere, which I've done slightly, but not as much as I've wanted to. So what is all this stuff, this fallacies? I feel like it's never bad to redefine what a fallacy is to me. I think I've already gone over it. Obviously, it's a mistaken idea. It's a false conclusion, like I mentioned earlier in this episode. So again, I already mentioned why they're important, and I guess I can go into that a little bit more. This podcast, this Mistaken Ideas series, is supposed to also help people in general, listeners specifically, and myself, to avoid shitty conversations and to be able to avoid them efficiently. So when somebody makes a ridiculous claim and has no evidence to support it, you can sort of escape using this knowledge, and this happens all the time to us. I think that most people don't even know when they do it themselves, and that's another thing. It's also one of the goals is to not only to avoid shitty conversations and time wasters, but it's also not to waste your own time by engaging people in conversations that you think are valid, but then with this knowledge of fallacies, you can realize that you yourself don't need to start every conversation that comes into your mind. Obviously, it could be fun, and having ridiculous, tangential, totally useless conversations is normal and fine. I'm not judging anyone, and I'm not judging that kind of behavior. But if you are actually trying to get to the bottom of something, if you're trying to understand something, this is the arena that I'm talking about. This is where you can save time by by being able to identify these things. So let's get on with it. The previous episode, I did the fallacy of the horns, which is a loaded question fallacy. I tried to come up with some examples of that, other than the are you still beating your wife example. And I've been lazy about it, so I've been kind of, you know, looking on the internet for examples, but haven't really found that many. I saw an interesting Wikipedia article called Horns of a Dilemma, and I can tell you a little bit about that. It says a dilemma is Greek for two premises, so dilemma. Lemma means premise, I guess, or argument. The page says, a dilemma, which is Greek for two premises, has been likened to the front end of an angry and charging bull, hence the fallacy of the horns. But this page is more about like a scene from a Greek philosopher named, it's either a Greek philosopher named Phaedrus or a character from like Plato or Socrates, a character from one of their, what do you call them, dialogues. And it says here, Phaedrus, because of his training in logic, was aware that every dilemma affords not two but three classical refutations. And in the book, Mastering Logical Fallacies, he talks about how to refute, arguments, basically, or how to refute a claim. So back to the horns of a dilemma, it says you could take the left horn, you could take the right horn, or you can go in between the horns, which is to say that you deny that there's only two choices. And there's all these other things that they're referring to in the Wikipedia article, which it actually says it's an essay, and I don't really know who made this essay, but if you read it, it's a little meandering. It's not very clear where they're coming from and where they're going with it. It seems like very random, sort of like this podcast. But it's interesting because you'll see some of the elements of the fallacy of the horns in there. And so I know I'm talking about the old one, fallacy of the horns, but I just wanted to recap that and also invite everybody to go to the Voices from the Dark Twitter account or whatever, tweet at voicesfromthedark.com on Twitter. I don't want to have to look up the Twitter name right now, which is pretty lazy, but I'll put it into the show notes. I'm going to make much more detailed show notes for this episode. So anyway, the examples that I couldn't really find more examples of the, the loaded question fallacy. But you basically understand that this is something, it's sort of like a trap. And it's an easy thing to avoid, because if you just listen to the question, you can see that there's something in it that you have to agree with, and that you claim that you have to basically validate by actually answering. So the best way to answer a loaded question, or to refute or defend yourself from this type of question, from this type of rhetoric, basically, is to basically not answer the question, or to say, well, I don't. So in the example of do you still beat your wife, you would have to answer it in two parts. You'd say, I have never beaten my wife, and therefore, or you just say, I've never beaten my wife. So it's basically, instead of giving a yes or no answer, which is what is required of this type of question, you give your own answer. And or you can even just say, I'm not going to answer that question, because it's a loaded question. And then you can actually even go into what a loaded question is, and even help people in your conversation Not that, and you know, the problem is that a lot of people will be doing this on purpose. But if they're actually making a mistake, then you can teach them, or you can just teach the people who are listening to your conversation, as usually there's some, you know, hangers-on. So, what's up with this episode? I'm going to introduce another fallacy, which I think is great, and it's going to be a little confusing because it's also known in literature. I'm going to just say it. The red herring. So a red herring in literature, from what I understand, from what I remember from my schooling, is a basically throwing someone off the trail of your plot. So it's like introducing a character who is seemingly the murderer in your story, but it turns out that that murderer, that suspect, was just a red herring, and what that means is that it was just a distraction from the real killer. So it's an author's device. It's a literary device, the red herring. Now, in philosophy and logic, or whatever the field is, I'm calling it philosophy, but I guess it's also logic, obviously. In logic, a red herring is actually quite related to the non sequitur, which means that it does not follow. It's just a poor reasoning. A red herring is when somebody brings up a seemingly similar argument to refute another argument, the argument at hand. And this red herring is also known by other names. It's also known by the name, Greek name, I think, or Latin, sorry, ignoratio elenchis, which means basically the ignorance of how to refute something. And so that definition, saying that it's an ignorance of how to refute something, is actually very, what's the word? It's actually very forgiving on the part of the person who's analyzing the argument, is very hard to describe. It's actually very forgiving, because to say that it's an ignorance of how to refute something actually is implying that it is not an intentional fallacy. And so one of the main things about fallacies is that, and I think I might have mentioned this in the previous episode, one of the main things is that, you know, they can be intentional or unintentional. And, you know, they are not, what, you know, intentional fallacies might seem more dangerous, but unintentional fallacies can also be just as dangerous, because they're still spreading falsity and errors. They're spreading, you know, wrong things, let's say. So it's actually quite forgiving, quite, there's another word for it, but I can't think of it. But it's neither here nor there, really. The red herring is, so if it's intentional, then it's a way of diverting the attention of the listeners away from the original argument, so that it's not, so that they're basically changing the subject in a way. And then the unintentional version is this ignorance of how to refute something. And actually, this is the thing that happens most of the time, and I still think that it's terrible, and we should watch out for it and really learn this fallacy, because it is so widespread. Now, for the examples, red herring examples, I'm going to try to remember one off the top of my head. Basically, someone makes the claim that, or I make the claim, my opponent has said that the Iraq invasion by the United States was an atrocity. But has he ever? What about the invasion of the Ukraine by Russia, or the annexation of the Crimea by Russia? And that's my argument. So this is a red herring. It's basically bringing up a completely, it's not completely irrelevant, but it's bringing up something that's not the topic at hand. It's kind of, and I actually called it at some point, I called it the what about this fallacy. So it's like, you say this, but what about this? And so they're not necessarily connected, maybe thematically connected, like one is that both are about invasions. But if you're talking about the U.S. invasion of Iraq and you're making a claim about that, to refute that claim by, if someone else refutes your claim about the U.S. invasion of Iraq by bringing up the British invasion of Egypt or whatever, it's basically, you know, it's disingenuous. It's not, it's dishonest, if they're doing it intentionally. Now, like I said before, most of the time this is happening unintentionally, but it's no less important to be aware of it. And also even to mention it to the people that you're speaking with, because it's showing that they're not thinking. And you do it all the time. I do it all the time. I do it a little bit less now because I'm like actually quite obsessed with this particular fallacy, because I feel like maybe I have done it maybe too much. Again, I just wanted to say that on Twitter, I'm going to give you the Twitter handle in a minute if I can find it. I should know my own Voices from the Dark Twitter handle, right? Oh, look at that. There it is. So it's actually voices_dark. So twitter.com. Also, give it a follow. Tweet at me ridiculous shit. I don't really care. But mostly give me, tweet at me examples. I want to, at this, you could also, you know, do this on Facebook or whatever, or anywhere that I might be, that, you know, I can be found, or I can find you. Just tweet at me examples of not only the loaded question, but also the new one, the red herring. So now we've got two. And, you know, actually I want to keep this as a sort of running list, because I was thinking about doing some kind of a page on the website that shows like all the fallacies that we work through and have it there as a resource on the web. But actually I would like to keep this going and sort of alive and sort of just sort of ephemeral, where it's like, if you're engaged with the podcast, then you'll be doing this. It's not like you just go to the website. But we have Wikipedia for that. If you want to look up a fallacy, just go to Wikipedia. I recommended the book by Michael Wythe, but obviously, I mean, most of his stuff is on Wikipedia, and I've cross-referenced it. It seems what he says there is not extremely different from what's on the Wikipedia pages. Obviously, it is very different in some ways and stylistically and so on. But so tweet at me as much as you can with those, because actually, I really like to see those, and I think that it's also going to be helpful for listeners and also for people who really want to be kind of engaging in this crazy Voices from the Dark sort of sphere of I don't know, philosophy, fallacies, logic. I don't know if you can hear my son crying in the background, but maybe I'll cut that out later. He's pretty much screaming. So I found some examples of the red herring on the internet, and I guess I can just look at those. Click, click. My clicky click is not clicking. Click that. It has been clicked. So, totally random. Just did a Google search, got some websites. Here's, actually, some of these I haven't even read. softschools.com, there's a red herring page, red herring examples. And of course, actually, they start out with a literature mention about. So it says, in literature, a red herring is an argument or subject that is introduced to divert attention from the real issue or problem. Red herrings are more common in persuasive writing and speech than in fiction. I don't know if that's true. I don't know why they even bothered to say that it's more common. I don't know if that's really makes any sense to mention that. But I always understood it as a literary term. And then when I found that it was a logical fallacy, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And they're actually related. Obviously, it's diverting the attention, like it says here. Anyway, so examples of red herring. Number one, when your mom gets your phone bill and you have gone over the limit, you begin talking to her about how hard your math class is and how well you did on a test today. So yeah, that's basically, yeah, diverting the attention, bringing up another subject, changing the subject. Your mother gets the phone bill. Her topic is the phone bill and that you've gone over the limit. And you, instead of saying why you went over the limit or even saying you're sorry or something like that, or just admitting guilt, you instead say that your math class is hard and you've been working really hard at school, and so it's not really addressing the issue or the problem. Now, number two, when you are late getting home past curfew, you distract your parents by talking to them about the weather, how cold it is or how rainy it is. That actually doesn't seem very much like a red herring, but that's the thing. I like to see these examples. I mean, I'm terrible coming up with examples on the fly. Like, it takes me, like, I would sit here in silence for like 5-10 minutes just kind of trying to come up with one example for you. That's why I've got these links here. Anyway, that's interesting. So instead of even, so it's an implicit issue, like you're coming home late. And so you try to distract them, your parents, by talking about something else. Okay, I can see how that could be loosely a red herring. Number three, the mother of a young child tells him to go to bed and he begins to ask questions, say that he's hungry or say that he needs to go to the bathroom, all to avoid bed and distract mom. Again, I think that's quite weak, but still interesting to see that take on it. Yeah, and then it's got some examples of red herrings in speech and literature, a bunch of other links to who knows what else on this softschools.com website. No judgments, just looks a little weird. All right, so the next one is, come on, I don't know why. Trying not to touch my keyboard too hard because I'm doing this on a table that actually really vibrates a lot. Okay, this page is called logicallyfallacious.com. Great name for a website about logical fallacies, don't you think? It says it's the ultimate collection of over 300 logical fallacies, the academic edition. So, red herring. That's the page I'm on. And then, yeah, obviously they have fallacies A, C through AN, fallacies appeal to. There's a lot of appeal to fallacies, so I guess they have their own section about that. So it's basically an A to Z of fallacies, which is really awesome. I'll probably dig into this site more than once as we go through more fallacies as the series progresses. Red herring. Ignoratio elenchi. So this is the Latin phrase again. What is it? They don't say it on this website. Or maybe they do. Anyway, it's ignorance of how to refute something. Ignorance of refutation, it says right there. And it's also known as several other things. As I've mentioned, many fallacies and even fallacies in general have lots of different names. I'll try to keep it going with the same name for the same thing. So I will not always go back and forth saying, using different names for it. So to me, this is the red herring we're talking about. And it's also known as beside the point, misdirection, changing the subject, false emphasis, the Chewbacca defense, which is actually also in the book by Michael Whitey, an irrelevant conclusion, an irrelevant thesis, clouding the issue, and finally, ignorance of refutation. This is great because it's got, I could just read from the book as well, but whatever. The description here on logicallyfallacious.com is attempting to redirect the argument to another issue to which the person doing the redirecting can better respond. While it is similar to the avoiding the issue fallacy, which I don't even think I got into in that book, I don't think it's there, the red herring is a deliberate diversion of attention while the intention of trying to abandon the original argument. So that's interesting. I think in the Wythe book, he says that it could be either intentional or unintentional, or deliberate or accidental. I guess I can look from, I don't know if you can hear me flipping through the pages. I'm always amazed at what these microphones can pick up. But then also in when you actually go to publish, it doesn't always, or to mix down or whatever you want to call it, to make a file out of it, it doesn't always bring everything so loud. It doesn't make everything as loud as you think it is, like my son crying in the background, for example. So where's the red herring in this book? This is what I try to avoid, silence in a podcast, but maybe it's good. Maybe let's have a moment of silence. Think about the red herring. Why don't you think about some examples and tweet at me? I gave you the tweet address, right? Voices_dark. There it is. Red herring. Ignoratio Elenchi, the Chewbacca defense, and he has a picture of Chewbacca on this. There's a lot of pictures in this book, by the way. It's very adult. It's only for adults. Let's see. Attempting to derail an argument by bringing considerations that are irrelevant or out of context. Yeah. Actually, yeah. It seems like in the book here, it is used intentionally. So maybe I was wrong about that. But what may you actually, if I mean, I'm going to figure it out myself as well, but it'd be nice if you guys would try to figure out if the red herring is the intentional, the deliberate diversion of attention of an issue. What is the opposite of that? I think it might be the avoiding the issue fallacy, but that also seems deliberate. So if we can figure out on Twitter or wherever, Facebook, or even just go to the comments section of this episode on the post on the website, what is the unintentional? Because that one to me is extremely common. It happened to me like in one day, probably could happen to me like 5 times in one day. I mean, I swear. Maybe it's particular people that you speak to, but in any case, it's quite common. If you ask me, obviously I didn't do any research on that. I'm not going to give you any fake statistics, which is another type of fallacy we'll get to one day. Some more. Oh, this is actually a great thing here that I found. It's from medium.com by an author named Chelsea Nina Urson. She's got a rock band called Banana. She writes about being a female rock musician and related things. That sounds interesting. This is from February 7th, 2017. And it says Trump tweets as examples of common logical fallacies. That to me was great when I found that. And the first one is a red herring. I might as well just read her intro here. I'm teaching a college public speaking course. I could use a public speaking course myself. And needed good examples of logical fallacies to help my students think critically about the methods speakers use to persuade their audiences. Luckily, for anyone trying to learn these slippery tactics, President Trump's tweets tend to beautifully demonstrate at least a fallacy or two. So here are some of the big ones. Red herring. Speakers use red herrings to distract the listener slash reader from themselves or the problem at hand. When they are accused of something, instead of providing evidence to disprove the accusation, they attack someone else or for something else. That doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound like... That sounds actually like an ad hominem. Or... Yeah. Anyway, she says, here Trump says he doesn't have deals with Putin and Russia, but instead of explaining why that is true or providing proof of it, he attacks Obama for his missile dealings with Iran. This is sounding more like a red herring. It's kind of like trying to put Bobby in timeout for spitting at Molly when Bobby says, Bobby, but Jimmy kicked Sally. That was confusing. It's kind of like trying to put Bobby in timeout for spitting at Molly when Bobby says, but Jimmy kicked Sally. I think that's just a poorly formulated sentence, but I think I know what she means. Donald Trump. I don't know Putin. Have no deals in Russia, and the haters are going crazy. Yet Obama can make a deal with Iran, number one in terror, no problem. Okay, that's not a great example, but again, nice to see different versions of this red herring, because technically it is a red herring because it's bringing up another issue. Changing the subject. And probably in Donald Trump's case, he's a fucking idiot. So he's just ignorant of how to refute something. So he thinks he's making some kind of a point here, but it's not a point. And the main thing is that it's got, although they might be thematically related, Obama making deal, so-called, well, anyway, I don't even want to talk about the content of this ridiculous tweet, but Obama or anyone making a deal with one country and someone else making a deal with another country, you know, they're two separate topics. You know, obviously, if they're related in some way, that's one thing, but if you're talking about one of those topics, simply mentioning the other one does nothing. It's not a refutation. So I got one more link here for you for the red herring. And I hope that you guys are already tweeting at me. And I hope that you've got some really good shit. So this one is called, what is a red herring? Oh, it's from thoughtco.com. Sounds familiar. It's under the humanities and languages section. And it says it's a glossary of grammatical and rhetorical terms. What is a red herring? That's the name of the article. By Richard Nordquist. Also from 2017, May 8th. He says, in logic and rhetoric, a red herring is an observation that draws attention away from the central issue in an argument or discussion. Also called a decoy. Ooh, I like that. In certain types of fiction, especially mystery and detective stories, authors deliberately use red herrings as a plot device, like I said. So, yeah, to throw them off the scent or the trail. Let's see. They talk about the history of the term, which is not so interesting. He also mentions it. Michael Wythe also mentions it. Here's some examples in his book. Here are some examples and observations. A red herring is a detail or remark. Wait, that's not an example. Let's see. There's not really any examples of it. Alistair Campbell's red herring. Shit. I guess we have to know who Alistair Campbell is. Credit where credit is due. This is in quotes. In the space of a couple days, Alistair Campbell has managed to turn an argument about the way the government presented its case for war in Iraq into an entirely different dispute about the way the BBC covered what was going on in Whitehall at the time. Okay. As a piece of news management, it has been brilliantly done. Hats off to Mr. Campbell for the way he pulled the trick. It is easy to imagine in years to come how a new generation of trainee spin doctors will be raised on this case study of how the master was able to wrong foot his tormentors so successfully. Brilliant or not, what Mr. Campbell has achieved is largely a classic use of a very pungent red herring. Yes. These are not examples. I mean, it's quite... It's basically just a report about the example. I would like it to be something that's a little more concrete. Let's see, the lighter side of red herrings. No. No, I guess that's it. There's no real... Anyway, that's thoughtco.com, an article about red herring, about the red herring by Richard Nordqvist. And, yeah. So basically, I don't have any more examples. And we already talked about everything that I wanted to talk about. So now it's up to you people. Start tweeting at me. Now, I know this is not live, so don't think I'm a fool. But if you're listening to this now, I'll be publishing it today. Oh, I should probably say what day it is. It's Monday, August 13th. And I just got back from France, by the way. I can talk a little bit about that, because that was awesome. I went to a place called Nice and another place called Montpellier, and both in a place called Provence, France. Anyway, I like France a lot. I still haven't really explored as much as I want to, especially when it comes to wine. You guys probably don't know that I'm a wine enthusiast, but or at least maybe I didn't know that. I just came back from there, and this is my first work day back, so I'm just trying to get right into the swing of things on this Monday, this beautiful Monday in Berlin. It's like 80 degrees out or something. Still pretty good weather. It's not even the end of August yet, but I can feel that the temperatures are starting to come down a little bit, which I'm not too happy about, because I know that that doesn't stop. It goes all the way to freezing and below. But, yeah, I talked about everything that I wanted to, so it's up to you guys now to kind of tweet at me, come up with some examples of a red herring. I'm going to put more details into the show description, because I just also want people to interact more. I think that the next episode, I should probably choose also. This is probably a good thing. I'm going to choose, maybe I'll just choose at random. I'll flip to a random page in the book, or I'll go to the index and just randomly point at something. Anyway, none of this is going to be so random, but let's see what I can come up with. No, that didn't work. I got a person's name. No, that's a... Oh, and actually, in the Michael Wythe book, there's sort of a couple of different intros, and one of them is a sort of a list of key terms. He says it's a list of the most common terms you'll encounter in this book. This is actually something I wanted to talk about, but I forgot to put it in my notes, so I totally forgot to mention it. He's got like a dozen key terms, and actually some of them I couldn't tell you if he ever mentioned this. For example, a modal, a type of statement that deals with necessity, possibility, or impossibility. I feel like he never mentioned that word at all in the book. But anyway, he defines basic terms like argument, a set of statements, premises, that are given to advance a conclusion. An audience is the people listening to the argument, those to whom the argument is directed. That seems quite basic, doesn't it? A commitment, this actually I really like, a commitment is a proposition that takes a proponent takes to be true, either implicitly or explicitly. So that's interesting, because when we speak, we're making commitments. So we're making, and they're either implicit or explicit commitments. So for example, when I say, that chair is ugly, my explicit commitment is that the chair is ugly. It's ugly. But I guess an implicit commitment would be that that thing is a chair. I know that's a crappy example, and I've told you many times that I can't come up with examples off the top of my head very, very well. I need at least 5 minutes. It's not podcast worthy. Got to keep it flowing. A conclusion is a statement that follows from the preceding statements, the argument. So the preceding statements are the argument, and the statement that follows the argument, which is also the premises. So the statement that follows the premises is the conclusion. I think that's quite clear. Important, clear, not too ridiculous like the audience definition. Conditional, a statement of the form if A then B, where A cannot be true and B false. That's always very, I mean, obviously we all know if A then B, what that means. But I think the last part of it, where A cannot be true and B false. So A cannot be true and B false. So if A is true, then B cannot be false. If B is false, then A cannot be true. I don't think it works both ways. Anyway, it's a conditional. And this is more formal logic, which actually is quite interesting in an abstract way. And maybe I'll get into more of that stuff later on once we have, like, once I've done this for 10 years. What do you think about that? No, maybe 1 year. I'd be quite happy if I was doing this for 1 year. Or if I had the time to do this for 1 year. A deductive argument is an argument whose conclusion follows logically from its premises. Okay. Seems a little too basic for a deductive argument. But let's leave it at that. A fallacy. The use of invalid reasoning in an argument. Yeah, so invalid reasoning. It's like a non sequitur. Mistaken idea, which is where I got the name for this podcast, for this series. An inductive argument, an argument whose premises give good evidence for its conclusion, inferring a general law from particular examples of it. I would have to think about that a little bit more, or read a little bit more about those two, deductive and inductive arguments, to really say what the difference is. I think that some of those especially the deductive argument definition is a little vague. Anyway, I'm not going to go into all of those. That was the first column, and there's just another column with about the same amount of terms in it. So what was I getting at before? So I'm going to randomly pick because I've chosen these based on my own wishes. Now I'm going to do a random one. Plurium interrogatorium. What the fuck? 106. Page 106. Gotta be kidding me. I won't even tell you. That's the loaded question page. So, anyway, let's go random. No, that's too easy. I pointed at ad hominem. That's too easy. I'm not going to choose that one. Sorry, guys. I'm just going to choose one at random. Come on. Fake precision. So, fake precision. Very, very common thing common sort of rhetorical device. See, you know, a lot of these, I don't know if they're all specifically fallacies or even, you know, if everybody agrees that every single one of these in this book is a fallacy, or that what, so basically what I'm trying to say is that, like, what some people might call a fallacy, some people might just call, you know, stupidity. But fake precision is something that we all do. I want you guys to look it up, find it in either Mastering Logical Fallacies or on Wikipedia or on one of those sites that I mentioned, like Logical, what was it, logicallyfallacious.com. I'm sure they have it there. Yeah, figure it out. Give me some examples. Tweet at me, Facebook me. If you actually listen to this podcast, give me a like and give us a like or whatever, you know, the royal us. Give us a like, give us a follow, give us some examples. And of course, more examples of red herrings, loaded questions. If you can find some loaded question, some good loaded question examples, please do tweet them, email them, send them by messenger pigeon. I really don't care. Just get them to me somehow. Because that one, like I said, I've been a little lazy, but you know, it's hard to find good examples on the internet, so I'll have to come up with some of my own. And yeah, maybe I'll do that. So to keep it rolling, as like I said before, I'm not going to make a resource page at this moment in time, but to keep it rolling with each fallacy that we talk about on the show, let's just keep it rolling with loaded questions, red herrings, and fake precision. I'm going to take a little break, fill up my glass of wine here, and come back to you guys with a little bit of a conclusion. Hopefully it won't be fallacious. But yeah, just to end the episode. Yeah, so hang tight. I'll be right back. I'm back. So I'm going to wrap things up here for this episode. Episode number 12 of Voices from the Dark. Today is August 13th. Just to recap the episode, basically, we talked about, we talked about three different fallacies. The first one was the fallacy of the horns, or the loaded question fallacy. Second one was the red herring fallacy, which is also called, or known as, the ignorance of refutation. And we talked about some different things, some issues concerning fallacies, how they can be identified, avoided, why we need to identify and avoid them to save time in conversation. And also we mentioned a little bit about the fact that some of these fallacies can be fun, they can be playful, you know, with the ambiguity of words, playing with words. You know, all that can be very fun, but when we're trying to understand things and get to the bottom of issues, we need to be able to identify them and actually avoid them, not only in the people that we're talking to, but also in ourselves. And we can debate about whether one of those is more important than the other. I think that they're, so far that they're quite equal. We also talked about the fact that we can tweet at Voices from the Dark at twitter.com/voices_dark. Some examples of the fallacy of the horns and the red herring fallacy. And of course, before we get to mistaken ideas number three, which will be about the randomly selected fallacy, which was the fake precision fallacy, which is actually one of my favorites because people use it all the time. And we also talked about the difference between the deliberate fallacy and accidental or unintentional, intentional versus unintentional. So that can possibly apply to almost all fallacies, I would think. But we're going to keep it simple and just try to keep going with a new fallacy every week, or I should say every episode. And again, just tweet at me or tweet at the podcast Voices from the Dark, twitter.com/voices_dark. Give me examples of the fallacy of the horns, the red herring, and of course, before the Mistaken Ideas 3 comes out, it would be nice to have some participation with examples of fake precision fallacy. You can find those on Wikipedia, I believe, or you can use the book that I'm using, Mastering Logical Fallacies by Michael Wythe. I just wanted to repeat some of the announcements I made before to keep you keep it fresh in your head. There's a possible live show coming up that's going to be in September. I think that's going to be every Sunday, and I'll be able to choose my own topic, bring my own guests, and there will be music involved. That's all I can say at the moment. Another collaboration, which will be some kind of an audio collaboration with a previous guest who I'm not going to say who it is yet. The Socialism Podcast, You Capitalist. That's You, Capitalist. Will be coming out. It's just I need to formulate the first, the concept of the first episode so that I have a basis to, you know, so that I can have a basis of, for conversation with my, basically I'm going to bring in people who are either socialists or know a lot about socialists or hate socialism, people who have some kind of an idea of what socialism is, because I have no fucking idea what it is at this point. We'll be talking about different things in terms of that, mostly focusing on U.S. politics, definitions of socialism, how does socialism actually manifest in society, examples of socialism, so on and so forth. And it's not to promote or to denounce the, or at least that's not my goal. My guests might have different agendas, which I will let them speak about, but not, I won't give, I'm not giving a political platform to people. I want to be very clear about that. This is more about me trying to figure out what socialism is, because I have my ideas of what it is, but they're not very clear to me. And I feel like other people have their ideas as well, and they're not clear to me either. Then I will be streamlining this podcast at some point, doing a sort of, it'll be, so right now I just publish them as I do them. I'm hoping to have something like every Sunday or every Saturday, I'll do like 3 hours of podcasting, and that'll be like 2 episodes, and possibly do events surrounding that so that there can even maybe be a live audience, not necessarily live podcast, but a live audience. So yeah, just get things more structured, and then also make it a little bit easier for me to do 4 podcasts a month so I can do 2 in 1 day. Other than that, I think I covered everything that I really wanted to get to. You know, I feel like podcasting is amazing. Doing it alone is very difficult. So please, if you're in Berlin or anywhere and you have some technical capabilities or even just the will to learn, please get in touch with me, because I can always use the help. I'm like I said, I need to structure it in such a way that I'm like, you know, not killing all my time. Not that it's not that I feel bad about the time that I use to do these podcasts, but I do need to be more efficient. And so really, just to wrap it up, those are my announcements. This is Steve Kafari from Voices from the Dark. This is episode number 12, The Dirty Dozen. I'm going to send out an invite for drinks for The Dirty Dozen. It's basically The Dirty Dozen, Voices from the Dark, Dirty Dozen celebration. And I'll give you I'll probably do a Facebook Facebook event or something like that. Try to get that done this week. Tomorrow I have another podcast coming up. Tomorrow, that's Tuesday the 14th, and that will be another installment of the artist series. If that doesn't happen tomorrow, then sometime very soon it should happen. And that is everything for the day. Thank you for listening. You have been listening to Voices from the Dark, hosted by Steve Kafari. Have a good night.